Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Well, they say an apple a day keeps the doctor away. And you know, it's funny, I had an apple today, and there's still a doctor in the house. And no, it's not Medical Monday. It's Food Friday. We're talking about nutrition today on Food Friday. How do we get all the vitamins and minerals we need? Are we getting something from all the food groups into our meals? Are we eating too much, too little? These are all questions for our guest today, Dr. Jennifer Lindstrom. She's a clinical nutrition specialist over at Albany Medical Center. She also happens to be the medical director of bariatric surgery, so she knows a lot about what does a body good. Is it still milk? I don't know. We'll find out. Let's talk about nutrition today. How do we stay on top of it in this new year? Give us a call now. The number to call, 1-800-348-2551. Again, it's 1-800-348-2551. You can also get in touch with us via email, voxpop@wamc.org. Go to our Facebook page if you wish, WAMC Radio. I believe we have a Vox Pop post there. You can tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop. That all works. We also have a comment section on our website, wamc.org/voxpop. There's a spot to comment there. But by all means, give us a call. We love that on a call-in show. 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Jennifer Lindstrom, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So in the old days, I'm 50. In the old days, nutrition was a rather simple thing. You had your basic food groups, and you tried to eat from the food groups. And it seems more complicated nowadays. What has changed? Or is it all the same as when I was a little kid?
I think a lot of the questions that come up about nutrition are partially because we don't do a great job of teaching it. So, for instance, people don't understand how many servings, for instance, of fruits and vegetables they need. The actual recommendation is 5 to 9 servings a day. Mm-hmm. And that being said, an individual portion of fruit may be more than one serving. So, for instance, the large apples that are in the store that we saw over the fall, those are more than one serving. They may be 2 or even 3 servings. Portion size is obviously a big question as well. Our visual reference for what a portion size is over the years has gone up and up and up. And so we think that that is a serving size when in fact it's not. There's some good information from the CDC and National Institutes of Health. There's a website where they have a PowerPoint called Portion Distortion to kind of show what's happened to our portion sizes over the years. And so I think that a lot of the problems that we're seeing, a lot of it relates back to lack of education.
Right. And am I wrong, or is it a physiological response that if you're not getting the proper nutrition, you'll be hungry regardless of how much junk you eat?
Food affects behavior, absolutely. We know that certain foods will make you feel fuller longer. For instance, foods that are high in protein, foods that are high in fiber. We know that if you eat too many carbohydrates, that actually can drive your hunger. So it is absolutely true that food affects your behavior. Sugar affects your behavior. And so paying attention to some of those signals can be helpful.
Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. We're joined today on this Food Friday. A little different today. We'll talk nutrition with Dr. Jennifer Lindstrom, and we would love you to give us a call at 800-348-2551. So kids today, there seems to be an epidemic of kids who are too big, and we won't use the F word, but there are many of them who are indeed a little large. What went wrong? Is it just portions, or is it just too many carbs? What is going wrong with society?
Again, I think education is a big component. I can tell you that when I see a child in referral for obesity, and I see children down to the age of 2, very often what I see are parents who simply didn't understand what was an appropriate portion size for a 2-year-old. So, for instance, a 2-year-old only needs 2 ounces of meat for the day, roughly between 2 and 3, depending on level of activity. And if I were to give you 2 ounces of meat as an adult, you would look at that and say, well, that's certainly too small. And so there's lack of understanding about what an appropriate portion size is for a child, and they change as children get older. And I think that the families that I've seen who've come in to see me have always been very responsive in terms of saying, wow, I didn't know that. And, you know, working towards improving things, which I think is the most we can ask people to do.
But does it come down to laziness sometimes? In other words, now in my day when I was a kid, usually one parent worked. There was somebody home all the time. Now, most households have two working parents, if there are two parents in the house. And is it a lazy factor? Well, the chicken nuggets are in there. We'll throw them in with some French fries and done. In other words, is this on the adults, the not going that extra mile?
Well, I think that parents are also interested in having a healthier lifestyle, healthier nutrition, and I think that they would want to benefit from that too. I wouldn't use the term lazy. I'd use convenience, and I think time is always a big issue. And I think that's where planning is very, very valuable when you're trying to improve nutrition for your family.
The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. We're joined by Dr. Jennifer Lindstrom, a clinical nutrition specialist over at Albany Med, among many other jobs. Let's go to Harriet in Woodstock. Harriet, you're first.
Hi. Here's my question. I would like to know what the doctor has to say about the role of fat in the absorption of nutrients, like particularly if you eat raw food all the time and you don't add a form of fat like olive oil or something to, let's say, a juice or something, you know, a carrot, apple, whatever, juice, and there's no fat content, that the actual nutrition is not available to your body.
That's a great question. That's something that for people who read nutrition blogs has been discussed recently. So to be clear, I don't think that any nutritionist or dietitian would recommend a no-fat diet. Fat is important in your diet for lots of different reasons. And remember, there's different kinds of fats. There's unhealthy fats like the trans fats, which we want people to avoid. There's healthy fats from things like avocados that we do want people to have, from nuts. When it comes to vegetables in particular, let's talk about salad, for instance. Mm-hmm. We know that regular salad dressing probably improves the absorption of the vitamins and minerals from the salad versus a fat-free salad dressing. Now, that being said, portion size, again, is an issue. If you look at a serving size for most salad dressings, it's 2 tablespoons, mm-hmm. and many people use much more than that. So it's easy to make a salad, which originally was low in calories, high in vitamins and minerals, into a high-calorie meal.
Okay, but for instance, like if you had a big bowl of steamed broccoli, if you added a pat of butter to that, you would be enhancing the availability of nutrition.
True or not true?
It depends if it's cooked or not.
Oh, yes, steamed, cooked, definitely cooked.
You can have steamed broccoli without anything on it, and it's certainly going to be very healthy. I think the key point I want to get across is that you don't need to avoid fat in your diet completely. The recommendation from the American Heart Association is that fat should be no more than 30% of the calories a day. Unfortunately, the American diet, as you know, tends to be much higher than that. Now, certain individuals with certain medical conditions may have different recommendations, but that's something that would be taken on an individual basis.
Harriet, thanks a lot for the call. The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Let's go over to Lisa in Lee, Massachusetts. Lisa, you're on with Dr. Jennifer Lindstrom.
Hi, Dr. Lindstrom. I have a question regarding what part genetically modified engineering, corn syrup, and all of that sort of thing, pesticides, play in nutrition today, because it doesn't seem to be addressed by most nutritionists.
Okay. So I'll tackle the GMO issue first. The data with GMO is not great data in terms of demonstrating that GMOs are harmful to our health. Now, that being said, it's possible they are harmful, and we just don't have the studies to prove it yet. As far as pesticides go, pesticides are really required for us to get a lot of fruit to our table, and meaning in terms of mass farming. An individual person at home who has a vegetable garden in the back is probably not using pesticides. That being said, it's very important to wash your fruits and vegetables when you get them from the stores, because they certainly will have some chemical component in it. Some pesticides in very large amounts have been shown to be harmful, but really usually not in the amount that you would get from eating an apple or having grapes. So again, I think the message here is that absolutely consume your fresh fruits and vegetables. Make sure you wash them. And, you know, for those of you who have the opportunity to have your own vegetable garden, that would certainly be a nice, healthy option as well.
Thank you, Lisa. So if you ate an apple a day, every day, then should you be worried about pesticides?
That level hasn't been shown either. Like I said, it's an area under study right now. We know that there are chemicals in the environment that can affect your weight. So, for instance, within the last few years, I think many parents have become aware of the issue with BPA in plastics.
Sure.
BPA is also in the lining of many canned foods, which I don't think people realize.
Oh, I did not know that.
So these are areas that are under evaluation by the FDA. Now, many manufacturers have taken BPA out of, say, baby bottles and things like that.
Sippy cups.
I'm not aware of as big a push within the food processing plants that do canned foods. But again, something that's being looked at in terms of increasing recognition.
We are joined today by Dr. Jennifer Lindstrom. We will take a break, and then when we come back, you mentioned washing fruit and vegetables.
Yeah.
Maybe you could tell us when we come back after the break how to do that properly.
Support for WAMC comes from Sundog Cider at Solaqua, locally produced hard cider from New York Hudson Valley apples, unfiltered, naturally gluten-free, handcrafted at a revitalized solar-powered mill in Chatham, New York. SundogCider.com. University at Albany, offering a weekend MBA program for 22 months, including a study abroad session, 518-956-8330. And Schenectady Green Market, a community marketplace providing fresh local produce and artisan goods downtown every Sunday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. inside Proctor's, SchenectadyGreenMarket.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. It's a Food Friday and a little different today. We talked nutrition with Dr. Jennifer Lindstrom, and we've been talking about, the last call was about fruits and vegetables, and you mentioned washing them. I always wonder, when I'm washing apples for the kids, am I doing it right? What do you want to do, and what's possibly in there within that skin of that apple that I have to get off?
Well, it's more about the surface coating. I mean, anything that's been absorbed into the substance of the fruit, you're not going to be able to wash off. But I think getting off the surface contaminants is important. You know, as you know, from time to time, there's been foodborne illnesses. Even with vegetables, it's not just red meats and chicken and eggs. So washing it is important for a number of reasons. Really, mild soapy water is fine.
Soap? Really?
Yeah, you can use a little soap for sure. But you can also buy vegetable wash at the store. Many of the local grocery stores carry it. It's essentially a spray, and it's just a small way to do it that's easy and convenient as opposed to using soap and water.
So just a quick rinse is not enough?
No, probably not.
All right. Note to self, not just a quick rinse. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. You talked about trans fats and how the government has cracked down on trans fats. And in the break, you mentioned that salt is the next item. But as I understand the science, which is I work in radio, so I don't understand much, but I understand it that there's some debate about salt and the dangers of salt and too little salt and too much salt.
So there are recommendations for the amount of salt in the diet. The current recommendation is roughly 2,300 milligrams a day, which is roughly a teaspoon for the entire day. There were some studies recommending that for some individuals, that should be cut back to 1,500 milligrams a day, which would be a very low sodium diet. The reason that particular recommendation hasn't come into play for everyone is that for some people, that is too low. And that would be something that your provider or your physician could sort of counsel you about. Unfortunately, the typical American diet is well over 3 grams of salt a day. And in fact, for men, it's over 4. So we're way over. And part of that relates back to many foods that we eat, including breads. You know, you could bite into a piece of bread and it doesn't taste particularly salty to you, but it's very high in sodium content. And so even things that can taste sweet have high sodium in them. Hmm. So processed foods that you may not realize have a lot of salt can really set you over the edge in terms of your salt intake for the day.
So you predict then the government will be imposing new regulations on salt content of processed foods and et cetera, canned foods and whatnot?
Yeah, they're actually trying to work with the food manufacturers on this in terms of improving labeling. You know, many foods have labels on them, which not all consumers know how to read, but some of the labels are confusing. So for instance, if you walk down the potato chip aisle, you see a bag of potato chips and it says no trans fats.
Right.
And they're not lying to you. But consumers confuse that and think, well, that must mean it's fat-free, or that must mean it has no cholesterol. That's not what it means. It means it has no trans fats.
Right.
So the labeling can be very confusing for consumers.
So do you think we'll get to a point where the government has gone too far and people aren't buying things because it doesn't taste good anymore to them? In other words, you need a little salt.
Right. You do need salt in your diet. No one's suggesting that you should eliminate salt completely. You need salt for various biological functions and processes in the body. But I think it's clear that we've swung the other way and that our diet is too high in salt. I think it would be a wonderful day when I actually had to say, well, our diets are too low in salt.
Okay. That doesn't happen all that often, eh?
No.
All right. Back to the phones we go. Let's go to Marcy in Keene, New Hampshire. Marcy, you're on.
Hi. My question is, I was recently diagnosed with a swollen ileum. They said that they're not sure if it's Crohn's. There's not enough evidence. So they wanted to do more research. I don't know. But they're treating me for it. But anyhow, so I've actually gained weight. How common is it for people to gain weight when they have Crohn's? I haven't started the medication.
That's a great question.
And I have one more, too. I don't have an appetite all day long. I can go without eating because I'm not hungry. Now, I know that's not good for me, but what should I be eating for the nutrients, seeing how my body's not digesting the food and getting the nutrients?
So my first recommendation would be to sort of get fully assessed. It sounds like you're still under medical evaluation. The importance of that diagnosis can't be understated in that depending on what it is, it may change our nutritional recommendations. I would very much encourage you and your doctors, once your diagnosis is more clear, to consider nutrition evaluation really for an in-depth appointment, because it sounds like there may be some other issues that need to be considered. Now, as far as weight gain goes, the interesting thing about weight gain is you are absolutely correct. There are a number of medications which can cause weight gain, particularly things that are used for inflammatory bowel syndrome, and steroids in particular are one. But that being said, you could be vegetarian and gain weight. I always say that fat cells are the cockroaches of the human body, in that fat cells helped us survive years of starvation as we were evolving. And they don't really care where the extra calories come from. It's just really a mechanism of storing energy. And so having an in-depth nutrition evaluation might be of great benefit to you.
Okay, thank you.
Marcy, thanks a lot. We appreciate the call from Keene, New Hampshire. The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. On this Food Friday, we talk nutrition with Dr. Jennifer Lindstrom, and it's Carrie's turn. Carrie in Plainfield, Mass., you're on.
Hi, Ray. Great show today.
Thank you.
Yep. I have a question for your guest. Quick question. Is it more difficult for, you know, those people with having financial hardship to eat healthy?
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head. So it's not just about finances, in that perhaps I can't afford to pay for fresh fruits and vegetables. Certainly the cheapest fruits and vegetables that you're going to be able to get are the ones that are in season. It is far more expensive to buy something out of season that requires shipping. But also for low socioeconomic families, they may not live in an area where they even have access to healthy food. And that's actually been a big push with the government and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation to try to look at neighborhoods to make sure not only do they have walkable neighborhoods that are safe, mm-hmm. but do they have access to healthy food. So it's a great point.
Okay. Thank you for taking my question.
Carrie, thanks a lot for the call, as usual. 1-800-348-2551. Over to Bonnie in Sharon, Connecticut. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi.
You're on.
Ray. I just heard you are a nutritionist, correct?
Yeah, I'm not, certainly. Dr. Jennifer Lindstrom is, yes.
Okay, Ms. Lindstrom. I have a question. You just stated something earlier that the government is getting the food manufacturers to readdress their labels and to write them up so they're even more comprehensive to the layperson as they're shopping. Is any government agency or nutrition group getting in the faces of the food manufacturers, I'm talking food processors here, regards to the makeup of their food and their ratio of salt and fat, about possibly slowly tapering the public off of a high-sodium, high-fat diet in being able to sell their product and improving the health of their product? Relabeling the Titanic is not going to make it the good ship lollipop.
Correct. You are correct. Well, but that being said, you know, there's been an argument against that the other way, which is sort of the Big Brother phenomena, which is, so for instance, when the guidelines were passed about calorie labeling on national change. So if you had a certain number of employees and you were a chain, you had to have the calorie labels. So let's take McDonald's, for instance. There was federal guidelines about the calories had to be listed there. It had to be in the same font as the price, so they couldn't make it microscopic, so it couldn't be read. And the issue with that was that many people said, well, you know, they're ruining my lunch. I didn't want to know how many calories were in my lunch. They've ruined my day. And then there was a federal push for a national soda tax. And actually, in New York City, Mayor Bloomberg came under fire for this as well. And it was once again saying, you know, is the government going to be Big Brother and tell me what I can and cannot eat? And from a medical perspective, I was not really in support of the soda tax in that. So if you were going to tax soda, were you going to tax Twinkies or were you going to tax high sugar cereals? Because it seemed like they were just picking one particular thing when we know there's a lot of room for improvement. As far as recommendations to the manufacturers, the government will make recommendations, but as far as making it enforceable, I think that's another problem. The FDA doesn't have that kind of power. I think potentially what they could levy down the road would be taxes. But again, as you start taxing food and you make it less affordable for families, I think there's going to be backlash there as well.
Well, I don't see this so much as a taxing economic issue, so much as I see the food manufacturers working out the formula of what they put in their packaging to be like the most cost effective for them, irregardless of the impact on the public health. And we get taxed at the other end of that when obesity becomes a plague on society.
Those comments are correct. I would agree with that completely. But I think that in a free society and a capitalistic society, I'm not sure the best way to tackle that. I think you can hope that manufacturers will do the right thing. But that being said, I mean, everybody enjoys junk food from time to time. That's never going to go away.
From time to time is one thing, but suicide by fork is something else again.
All right, Bonnie. Well, thank you. You came down pretty hard on everyone. I appreciate the call, and thanks a lot. Let's go over to Irene in Rosendale. Irene, you're on.
Yes. Hello. Thank you. To me, salt... salt is salt in terms of sodium, but I have people telling me recently, promoting, not necessarily trying to sell me anything, but just people that I know who believe that things like sea salt are a source of valuable minerals, but I'm not understanding how much of sea salt you could have to get an appreciable amount of valuable minerals, and they criticize regular iodized salt as being all bleached out. I don't know even what that means.
All right, this is a good question.
There's no data supporting that claim. I've actually heard that before as well, and the claim that sea salt is healthier than regular salt, or that it's quote unquote lower in sodium, that in fact is not true. It may be less processed. That may be true. Salt was iodinized years ago in recognition that iodine deficiency many years ago, long before we were a ambulatory population, was an issue. The issue now is that you can buy uniodized salt if you would like to. So people use that for nasal rinses when they have sinus infections. But the myth that sea salt is appreciably better for you, I don't think is correct.
I don't either.
It's a great question, though. Thank you for asking.
Thanks, Irene.
Thank you.
Bye now. All right, that's interesting. 1-800-348-2551. Tom in Albany, you're on with Dr. Jennifer Lindstrom.
Yes, hi, Dr. Lindstrom. My question is kind of a more global, taking a step back. You know, the goal of nutrition, of course, is to have an overall healthy body. And, you know, a lot of the discussions that take place in America, they seem to focus only on what you put in your mouth. But isn't it true that, you know, exercise and, you know, moving your body is not only equally important, but I think it's absolutely essential to kind of get the full picture. In other words, I run 2 or 3 times a week, nothing spectacular, but when I do that, not only am I burning off, of course, calories, but you do it over a long period, like a few years, and you tend to almost naturally develop a healthier eating style. So what bothers me is that a lot of discussions about nutrition, by nutrition you should be discussing it, of course, but I mean, it should almost go hand in hand that exercise should be added, not just, I mean, if I sat in a chair all day and had my 9 servings of fruits and vegetables, I'm not sure I'd be that healthy.
Great question. So exercise is absolutely critical, but not necessarily for the reason that people think. So let's talk about weight loss. So if you have to choose one thing to lose weight, diet versus exercise, many people, based on evidence, would certainly argue that it's a diet. It is extremely difficult to out-exercise a bad diet. So, for instance, that 100-calorie snack pack, which takes you 20 seconds to eat, could represent your 20 to 30-minute walk. So if you do not change your diet and maintain an exercise regimen, it's unlikely you will lose weight. Now, let's forget about weight loss. Exercise has benefits above and beyond that, which I can't mimic with a pill. It can help improve depression. It can help improve anxiety. It improves sleep. It is the number one treatment for fatigue. It's been shown beneficial in many medical problems. So I think any responsible discussion about lifestyle change, which includes diet, has to have some discussion of exercise. For patients in whom exercise is difficult because of medical conditions, I would strongly encourage you to talk to your provider, your doctor, about a physical therapy assessment. That's how important it is.
Well, thanks a lot, Tom. Really, we're talking about nutrition today. Exercise more of a Medical Monday thing, but that's fine. Dr. Jennifer Lindstrom is our guest. Let me ask you a question. Milk, is it still okay?
Yes.
Yes?
So milk is an interesting topic. There is low-fat milk and there's regular milk. So whole milk, for instance, is roughly 3.5% fat.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's 2% milk, which is actually not low-fat. Low-fat milk is actually defined as 1% or skim. Milk has, other than skim, you know, some fats in it. And the low fat is recommended because of the saturated nature of the fat in dairy. But it has calcium, and which is we know is helpful for the body, for the bones, for muscles. The recommended serving for an adult, for instance, you know, roughly 180 pounds or so, is about 3 servings of dairy a day.
Okay.
And that would be 8 ounces of milk, maybe a yogurt. For cheese, it's 1 ounce.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think milk should be vilified. Now, some people are lactose intolerant and may need a different form. There are soy milk products, which are also available.
Do they have the same benefits, though?
Soy milk actually has higher protein than regular milk. So in an 8-ounce glass of milk, there's 8 grams of protein. In the soy products, it's 10 grams. So it's slightly higher in protein, and they are no fat.
But what about calcium?
They have calcium as well. They actually have more calcium than regular milk.
Do they add it, or is it part of
It's just part of soy, correct.
Okay, yeah. So milk is not bad. That's one email that I can delete. We get a lot of those around here.
Yep.
Milk is very evil. All right, here's an email. This is from Jamie. Ray, I was always told that a thin solution of white vinegar or lemon and water is good for washing fruit and countertops. Is this true, Doctor?
Well, vinegar could be used, certainly. I mean, I guess I would rinse it off. I don't know that you want your apple to taste like vinegar, but
no,
I think
really.
That would be acceptable.
All right, and then the letter goes on from Jamie. P.S. I've had Crohn's for 20 years, and when it comes to food, all I can say is listen to your body. As a general rule, nothing rich like cream sauces and butter, but after that, pay attention to what makes you feel good and what does not. This should be considered along with the weather, because depending on humidity, it can change. Small portions over big meals, and don't be afraid to walk away from the table. Prednisone, is it? Can blow you up and make you ravenous. Also, before rheumatoid arthritis takes hold, exercise, exercise, exercise. Yeah?
I agree with many of the comments. One thing about prednisone I'd like to say is that I don't think there are providers out there who are giving people prednisone without significant reason. It's not a medication you give to somebody lightly. If you need prednisone, there's an important reason for you to be on it. That being said, there's side effects from prednisone, including weight gain, that need to be monitored.
Okay. Thank you, Jamie, for the email. Our guest is Dr. Jennifer Lindstrom. It's a Food Friday, and we'll be back in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from Pangea, North Bennington, Vermont, catering Southern Vermont weddings and corporate events with menus designed for special occasions, VermontFineDining.com and Facebook. And the office of Dr. Vivian Letizia, Woodstock, orthodontic, cosmetic, and general dentistry, serving the Hudson Valley since 1986, WoodstockDentist.com.
Back to Vox Pop on WAMC. It is a Food Friday. We're talking with Dr. Jennifer Lindstrom about nutrition today, and the lines are loaded. We'll get right back to the phones. Why is it that things that are bad for you taste so good?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when they have done studies, again, as I mentioned to you before, food affects your behavior. And why is that? Because food affects your brain. So they've done PET scan studies, which are sort of functional MRI studies that look at the activity in the brain. The brain responds very vigorously to certain things, fat, salt, sugar. Unfortunately, it does not react to fruits and vegetables or fiber. So sometimes you'll hear the term, or you'll read online, there's support groups for food addiction. I don't have a test to diagnose you with that. But we know clinically there are some people who truly, truly do have food addiction. And that,
so they get high, basically, from eating certain things. Or get a rush or a buzz.
It fills a need, I guess, is the way I would put it. You know, we know for people who are feeling down and depressed, they tend to crave more carbohydrates. That relates to serotonin receptors. So it's really very complicated. For people who, let's talk about sugar, for instance. People who are quote-unquote addicted to sugar because they eat sugar all of the time. Sometimes, again, psychology can be helpful with that, but changing the diet can be helpful. You can reduce your cravings by how you eat and by what you do physically, again, where exercise will come into play.
Yeah.
So, again, I don't have a test for food addiction, but I can sort of assess that when I meet somebody and make some recommendations about the best way to tackle it. And it's never something that is a quick, easy fix. It definitely takes time. What people don't understand is that our feeding patterns developed over our lifetime, and it's not going to change overnight. And you have to be patient and give yourself the time to make the change.
Is there something inherent, something that goes back, let's say, a million years in our evolution, that when fat or sugar or salt, and it triggered something in ancient man that they really needed, that we're still feeling today? I mean, have we changed, or is it still, is there a reason that it makes us feel good?
Well, if you think back to periods of starvation in the world, 10,000 years ago. Think about fat. Fat has twice the calories that sugar or protein does per gram. Okay, fat's 9 calories and sugar and protein are 4. So if you're somebody who's starving and you want to get the most bang for your buck, fat's going to be it.
Yeah.
Right? So there may be some evolutionary processes that are in play.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. And Jane in Lee. Jane, you're on.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to ask about juicing kale every day. Is that safe? I had read something about, I don't know if it was oxalation or oxidation, something like that that could happen if you have too much kale.
I am not aware of that data. The one thing about juicing that I will mention is that juicing can be a healthy way to supplement your diet. However, the mistake that people make is they use kale and then they add 4 pieces of fruit. And then you've just totally made a sugar bomb. So I think that juicing can be done in a healthy way or an unhealthy way. But I'm not aware of any particular data where I would recommend someone stop doing kale juicing. For people who are on certain medications like blood thinners, there are some nutritional recommendations because it would interact with the medications. But that's a different issue.
Okay.
Thank you. And as a follow-up, can you tell me about the powders that are available for green drinks, like Green Vibrance is one example. Are those as healthy, as good for you? I mean, as juicing fresh vegetables?
I have no data to support this. I would say no, just knowing the processing that needs to happen in order to sort of dehydrate something. So I think if you can afford it and you have the refrigerator space, I would go with fresh.
Okay, thank you so much. Great show today.
Jane, thank you very much for the call. Here's an email. It says, this is from Carlene. It says, hi, I've had IBS, CHF, and other ailments for many years. I've been eating healthy foods, low fat, no junk foods, no alcohol, cigarettes of any kind, most of my 69 years. I was recently diagnosed with lymphocytic colitis. The colitis is causing serious inconveniences, so I searched the internet for a good diet. The intro to all the articles says to eat whole grain breads, lots of fruits and vegetables, etc. I already do that. When I scroll down to see what foods I should avoid, it says avoid whole grain breads, vegetables, and fruits. Who should I see to help me find the right diet? Thank you very much, Carlene.
Yes, absolutely. We have many patients who have complicated nutritional needs, either based on particular past medical history or maybe, again, medications that they might be on. Start with your primary care doctor and primary care provider, but a dietitian, a registered dietitian, or a clinical nutritionist would certainly be a great place to start.
Okay, back to the phones. And Jill in Waterford, you're on with Dr. Jennifer Lindstrom.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Doctor.
Hi.
Earlier, you spoke with a caller who asked about the government regulations to get rid of certain foods that are not healthy, and you were saying that it was a difficult task because of Big Brother and oppositions to it, et cetera, which I understand. But my question is, if that's the case, how were they able to get rid of trans fat?
So,
because that was a government regulation as well.
Well, we haven't gotten rid of trans fats, unfortunately. What they did was, so there's various medical groups that make recommendations to the government, including the Institute of Medicine, the CDC, the National Institutes of Health, about various medical problems. Trans fats, we know, are truly bad. I mean, when it comes
what
to
do they
food,
do?
They actually lead to increased risk of heart disease. They were shown to cause coronary spasm, so even minor exposure would cause the blood vessels in the heart to kind of squeeze down, which is not ideal.
Okay.
There's really no good component to a trans fat. So when we speak about the ban, what we're referring to is the fast food restaurants had been using a type of oil to fry their foods that had trans fats in it. The government was able to legislate that to make sure that they could no longer do that. To be clear, trans fats are the stable form of fat that are on the shelf in the grocery store. So if you go into the grocery store and you buy cake mix or you buy pancake mix, many of those contain trans fats, especially if it's the type that you only have to mix with water and you're not adding oil to it. So trans fats are still out there. The way you figure that out is it'll say polyunsaturated oils on the menu or on the ingredient. But again, this is where some of the, I don't want to say truth in labeling, but sort of transparency in labeling for consumers is, I think, an important goal for the government.
All right, Jill.
So if they were able to regulate from the fast food industry, why can't they regulate every, you know, other things as well?
It's a great question, and we'll see how that comes. I think there's people who are interested in doing that.
Jill, thanks so much for the call. Let's go over to Nancy in Stone Ridge. Nancy, you're on.
Hi. I was just wondering, it seems as though nowadays, the more you read about what you're eating, to get the full value of your food, you need to do certain combinations. And it's almost gotten to be a daunting thing when you're trying to set up a diet. And it just seems like a science in its own these days. So that's my question.
Is that true? You need to have combinations to make it work best?
Not necessarily.
Well, I read it.
Well,
yeah.
Then it must be. Was it on the internet? Because
no.
Okay, so go ahead, Doc.
So I think there's a few simple rules of thumb that people can follow. We recommend low-fat dairy, which, as I discussed, is 1% or skim. We recommend, if possible, fresh or frozen fruits and vegetables, only because some canned fruits and vegetables can either be high in sugar or high in salt. When you make your plate, a healthy way to make your plate, for instance, at dinner is to have half the plate be vegetables, a small corner meat, a small corner carbohydrates. So I think that it's about balance. And I think that fruits and vegetables are, they're so critical. I don't have a pill that can mimic how good fruits and vegetables are.
Mm-hmm. The one thing I have in mind was I had been always eating red cabbage in my salads. And I had read that, and I ate it raw, and I thought that was the best way I could get the value of it. And actually, red cabbage just being blanched, your body can absorb the nutrition out of it more readily than if it's in a salad without. So, without doing that. So, I mean, these are little tidbits that I'm picking up as I read, and I'm saying, geez, you know, I mean, who knows this? If you didn't pick the book up, you wouldn't know, you know?
Mm. Raw foods are always harder to digest than cooked foods. That is, in fact, true.
Nancy, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. Tomato sauce, a vegetable?
According to the government.
Yes, according to Ronald Reagan, yes.
You know, so it depends on, so yes, tomato sauce, when you look at the fundamental ingredient being tomatoes.
Still nutritious?
Well, it depends. I mean, listen, you can have tomato sauce that's incredibly high in sugar, incredibly high in salt. That might not be the best option for you. I think that the number of tomato sauces on the market is tremendous. I mean, you could go to Price Chopper, Hannaford, and Trader Joe's and find different things. So for me to comment on all tomato sauce would be irresponsible because there's no way for me to do that.
The good stuff in it. It's still good for you, even though it's cooked and processed and everything else, right?
Oh, cooked tomatoes, yeah. Certainly. But you have, like I said, you have to look at everything else, which, I mean, ketchup, for instance, is technically tomatoes, but it's incredibly high in sugar.
Okay. All right. Let's go to John in Coxsackie. John, you're on.
Yes. Good afternoon. Great show. You should do more of this kind of thing because people are really not too informed about what they're eating. I'd like to make a quick comment about when you go to the doctor. I don't think I've ever been to the doctor and had them ask me what I eat. That's just something that I want to talk about after. But my main point is that I had a lot of issues, digestion problems and bloating and everything several years ago. And come to find out that the culprit was soy. Mm-hmm. And since then, I've come across maybe a dozen people that have had similar symptoms, given up soy, and not had any more problems. And it's a cheap source of protein for manufacturers. It's grown all over now. It's a big money maker, but it has a lot of negatives to it. There's an organization that is called No Soy, and it lists about 25 different reasons why you should not eat soy. Plus, it's overprocessed. It's a tremendous amount of processing it requires, hard to digest, soy milk, all this stuff. It's a nightmare, and it's something that is being put in all kinds of products. Certain things a list like one of more of the following may contain one of the following, then a list like four different products. How can they even do that? You know, you don't even know what you're eating anymore.
Spin the wheel.
Yeah, so I'd like you to comment on soy. I think that most people think it's a wonderful thing to be eating, but it's really not that healthy.
Actually, we don't make a recommendation that people avoid soy unless they have a particular allergy. There are people who have allergies to soy products.
Allergy-wise, it's just indigestibility.
Okay. All right. Well, for you, that's good. And continue, Doctor.
From a nutritional standpoint, I wouldn't recommend avoiding it. That being said, at the break, we were talking about too much of a good thing is probably not a good thing. You can have ill effects from, for instance, eating too many carrots.
Yeah.
So I think moderation is still key.
It's the indigestibility factor of soy.
All right. Well, John, thanks a lot. Good luck. Let's go to Ron and Colony. Ron, you're on.
Yes. Hello, Doctor.
Hello.
Just a quick comment before I ask my question. The lady that's doing the kale, juicing it, she's better off just blending it. Get a David Wolf Nutribullet or a Vitamix and then mix, like, you know, I put like 25 things in my smoothie in the morning. Too much kale is not good either because it's cruciferous. And I disagree with you on the milk. Low-fat milk is too acidic, and that pulls calcium out of the bones because your body has to alkalize the excessive protein.
True or not
so
true, Doctor?
You're better off going with the full fat if you're going to. But that's not my question.
Well, hang on. Dr. Lindstrom address that.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
That guideline has not changed. We still do not recommend whole milk. We recommend low fat, which is 1%
of
skim.
I don't recommend milk, period, to tell you the truth.
As far as calcium goes, calcium is a mineral which does require a certain acidity to be absorbed. In fact, calcium is best absorbed in an acidic environment, not in a basic environment.
Okay. And now what's your question, Ron?
Well, this morning I was listening to Dr. Frank Schallenberg, and he kind of agrees with Dr. David Perlmutter, who wrote Grain Brain. And it's just a quick explanation that fat is like what we really need most of. That when you eat carbs, they turn to sugar in the intestines, and that stops the bodies from burning fat. So they're both in agreement. In fact, you'll find most of the top people in the health business recommend eating lots of fat.
Okay, well,
I know it's back and forth, but because your body burns it slower, and it's a steady source of nutrition, where if you keep eating carbs, your body's not going to burn the fat, and you'll get fat because you store the fat, because it starts burning the carbs first.
Okay, we're almost out of time, Ron. Let's let Dr. Lindstrom
go ahead.
Get
your opinion on it.
Yeah.
That is, again, not a recommendation that has been made. It has been studied. I think that the message about grains and carbs, it's not that they're bad. There's different quality grains and carbohydrates. I think, again, the issue is about the amount. When you eat too many carbohydrates, it certainly has ill effects on the body. I don't think there's any compelling reason on a generalized population basis to recommend eliminating carbohydrates.
Okay, let's go quickly to Joe in Saratoga. Joe, we only have about 30 seconds here for you. So you ask the question, the doctor will answer, and then we'll get out, okay?
Okay, this is easy. It's kind of a carryover from the last one. I was wondering if the doctor had any general, anything negative to say in general about the paleo type of diet.
What's the paleo type of diet?
That would be no grains, no dairy, nothing processed, no sugar added, no legumes.
So nothing at all?
So my comments on the paleo are that, again, I really disagree that all carbohydrates are bad. I disagree with that strongly. I also disagree with the dairy recommendation. I think that there have been people who are successful on paleo. People follow it for various lengths of time. And I'm not aware of any long-term data. As you know, paleo sort of became popular in the last few years, mostly through the CrossFit movement. So unfortunately, there's not really long-term data. But for some of their recommendations, I'm not sure that they're actually based in strong science.
Okay. Excellent answer. Thank you very much.
Joe, thanks a lot for the call. And I think we'll have to leave it there. Boy, Dr. Lindstrom, that was fun.
Yes.
And learned a lot and hope you come back.
Happy to come back. Absolutely. I said it at the beginning. We need to really improve the education for people on nutrition.
You know, I don't know if you've ever listened to a Food Friday before, but usually it involves eating plates and plates of food. So this is a kind of a healthy recharge for us, and we'll have you back again in the future. Thanks to everybody for listening. Thanks if you called in. Support comes from Lake George Kayak Company, a kayak, canoe, and stand-up paddleboard center, providing sales, rentals, and lessons. LakeGeorgeKayak.com. And the Warner Theater, Torrington, Connecticut, presenting the MOMIX 35th Anniversary, a celebration of company favorites, January 17th at 8 p.m. and January 18th at 2 p.m. WarnerTheater.org for tickets. Thanks again for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Well done, Zach. Thanks to Joe Makowitz, who took your calls. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. Once again, thank you for being here on Vox Pop. Monday, Alan will be in the chair. It'll be a medical Monday. Not like today, but another medical Monday. I'm Ray Graff. Have a great weekend. Stay tuned now for a news update.
This is Northeast Public Radio, WAMC FM HD 90.3 Albany, WRUN HD 90.3.